Hi everyone. Today we have a talk with Ms. Francine Murrell of Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. She is part of a group called MADGE, M-A-D-G-E, which stands for Mothers Are Demystifying Genetic Engineering. I love that name. So this group is of mothers who join together to raise awareness about the dangers related to this GMO and this monoculture driven industrial agriculture model that's being more or less pushed down our throat by big agribusiness biotech corporations, not just in Australia but almost everywhere on this planet. So over to our talk with Ms. Fran Murrell.
Okay, great. So please tell us, for the listeners, who are the people behind MADGE, and I don't know if MADGE is the right word, right way to pronounce it.
Yes, it is. It's MADGE, and it stands for Mothers Are Demystifying Genetic Engineering, but also Mothers Advocating Deliciously Good Eating, because we really want to let people know what's going on with the food, and the people who buy most food are mothers, frankly, and mothers are really concerned about the health of their children, and food is health. But to go back to the question about how did we start, well, we set up in 2007 and three of us formed MADGE. There was me, and then there was my friend Glenda Lindsay, who had travelled in India and in South Africa, had lived there for a bit and had really learned a lot about GM food there, which was fantastic, and Jessica Harrison, who's Australian, but she lived in England for a long time in the 90s when the whole issue about GM was coming up. And my exposure to the issues around GM was I did a graduate diploma at Melbourne Uni, and I learned about pesticides, and they really worried me. And then I learned about GM crops that were supposedly going to reduce pesticide use. So I was really interested in that. I thought that would be fantastic. But the more I looked into GM crops, the more concerned I became. Anyway, three of us got together in 2007 because at that time, the area in Australia where we are, which is Victoria, had a ban on growing GM canola. And the state government was thinking about lifting that ban. So we three got together to try and put out information to people to help them decide what they thought about GM crops and the lifting of the ban. And since then, we've kind of developed a website, Facebook, Twitter, and we've got loads of people all over the place who are really concerned about GM crops and feed us information, and sort of we have a discussion about what's going on.
Fantastic. And regarding this Victoria's ban on GM canola, what happened to it?
Well, it was very interesting because MADGE wasn't the only group working on this. There was Greenpeace and Gene Ethics and several others. And we managed to get a backbench revolt in the state parliament. But it was overruled by the Premier. And so the ban was lifted, even though there was enormous public opposition. And we know one MP said that he thought that things were a big issue when he got 12 contacts from his constituents. He got 800 over the GM issue. So the backbenchers did kind of listen to us and tried to revolt, basically, to say, no, we don't want this ban lifted. But I think what happened was that Victoria, like many places, is being schmoozed by the biotech industry. And I think there's a whole lot of promise of, oh, this fantastic health, pharmaceuticals, etc., coming out of it. So you really need to open up to agricultural biotechnology as well. Now, you know, biotechnology in medicines might be fine. I don't know. I haven't looked into it. But it's extremely different from planting GM crops out in the open and harvesting them and feeding us to them. I don't think you should confuse the two. But I mean, it was very disappointing to see the enormous amount of effort that people went into to say, no, we don't want this. Our elected representatives listened to us, but they were overruled.
So is GM canola being planted in Victoria now?
Yes, it's interesting because it was first planted in 2008 and there was a huge hoo-ha, this is going to be wonderful, this is going to be great. And I've just had news today that...
That farmers are trying to get away from it.
Well, they are. They're actually offering half-price GM canola because farmers don't want it. They don't want it because there's no particular yield. They're worried about it causing super weeds and people don't want to buy it. So it's a complete dud.
Mm. Can you tell me, Fran? Can I call you Fran?
Yeah, please do.
Is Victoria growing non-GM canola also?
Yes, most of the crop is non-GM canola. Like everything to do with GM, it's all shrouded in secrecy, so we don't know precise amounts of how much canola is GM and how much is non-GM, but we have heard that it's as maybe as low as 2 or 3%, and maybe as high as 7 or 8%. But
which one?
So it's sort of 90% non-GM. So GM canola is this tiny little niche product that really no one wants to grow, no one wants to buy, and. I think the market has spoken, really.
Fantastic. Is there any other GM crop being grown? Canola is not eaten. It's only used as cooking oil or what?
Yes, it is used as cooking oil and the canola meal. So when you crush the canola seeds, what's left over can be used as an animal feed supplement.
Oh,
so we're worried about that. But The other crop that's grown in Australia is GM cotton, and most of, like, over 90% of the crop is GM cotton. But because we've been in drought for a long time, there really hasn't been much cotton grown for about the past 10 years, although that has changed over the last couple of years. But so GM cotton is seen as the big success story because it reduces pesticide use when you actually spray it on. But I think that the more insidious effects of this cotton are that the cotton itself becomes a pesticide producing plant, and that will have effects on soil fertility. And we also know that even though the cotton kills certain insects like the bollworm, that then makes it more vulnerable to other insects. So And also the cotton is producing these pesticides itself. So is it really reducing the pesticide use?
Correct. So is it that GM cotton is BT cotton, I guess?
Yes, it is various versions of BT cotton. They've got Bollguard and Bollguard 2, but I think that, and other ones that they're releasing, but I think what's happening is that the pests are becoming resistant to this cotton, but the next rendition of GM is, I don't know, 5 or 6 years away. So it's highly likely that the pest problem will outrun the GM cotton in Australia. But we'll wait and see. But that seems to be what's happening elsewhere.
Hmm. BT, this cotton fields, after the cotton is harvested, is the rest of the plant, what is done with it?
I'm not entirely sure, actually. I have heard that it's not supposed to be fed, used as an animal feed, but then I hear that it may be. I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know that the answer to that.
I see. Okay, so let's move on to the next question, which is, you talked about Victoria. And how is it for the rest of Australia?
Well, GM canola is grown in New South Wales and they lifted their ban the same time as ours. And I think there was a bit of a take-up of GM canola at first, but then we've heard via farmers that they found it really didn't do anything for them. And in fact, there was a farmer group called the Birchip Cropping Group, and they did an analysis of everything and they found out that farmers that grew GM canola were $150 a hectare worse off than those that grew non-GM canola.
Hmm.
And then in 2010 in WA, Western Australia, which is the really big exporting state, they lifted the ban and grew GM canola over there. But it's not very, you know, a few farmers have taken it up, but I think it'll probably be the same as in the eastern states. A few farmers pick it up and try and find it's no good. But the damaging thing about these GM crops is over in Western Australia, there's an organic farmer called Steve Marsh. I don't know if you've heard about him, but his neighbour grew a GM canola crop and they swathed it, which means they chopped it down and left it in the field to dry out. And then a wind and rain washed it onto Steve Marsh, who's an organic farmer's land, and this was spread over 80% of his land, and he lost his organic certification. And the only way that Steve Marsh has any way of recouping his losses, because he couldn't sell his sheep because they'd eaten the sprouting GM canola, so he couldn't sell them as organic. The seeds got into his oat crop and it got into his wheat crop, which meant he couldn't sell the wheat to a bakery in Perth that wanted to sell it as organic. The oats were going to be used as feed for an organic piggery in WA that had to close down because they couldn't provide the feed. Anyway, all these things were destroyed by this GM canola. And so the only recourse is for Steve Marsh to sue his neighbour for damages, which is a terrible thing to do because they've grown up together. But that's the only way he can get any justice. And this is what GM is doing. It's tearing farming communities apart. But I'm very grateful that Steve Marsh is actually standing up, because obviously it's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars for this case to be brought. But if Steve wins, it will set a precedent for farmers all over the world that maybe they can, get damages for the loss of their profits, for the loss of their ability to farm in the way that they wish. But what's happening over here is that the biotech industry is pushing for the organic standards to be changed, because currently there's zero tolerance for GM canola, so you can't have anything GM in the organic, organically certified, and they want to allow amounts of GM canola contamination, which, as everyone knows, will just be a stepping stone to always raising the level of contamination in organic. And I think that is absolutely appalling.
Okay, so let's move to the next one. So who are promoting? Obviously, biotech companies are promoting, but other than biotech, maybe governments or big business or investment hedge funds, or who else do you think is pushing for GMO in Australia?
Well, lots of people. So what's happening is, unfortunately, the government doesn't fully fund universities anymore. And so you have partnerships between universities and people like Monsanto and Syngenta. So you have that link.
Yes, of
there's,
course.
So there's the CSIRO, which is really the Commonwealth Industry and Science Agency, basically, and that's no longer fully funded. And what you find is that Monsanto teamed up with the CSIRO to develop GM cotton. So there becomes a murkiness between... The CSIRO used to be seen as this fantastic Australian group of scientists who were doing things in the public interest. When they've teamed up with Monsanto to create GM cotton and have licensing agreements and making profit out of that, are they really so scientific and disinterested anymore? I mean, that's the whole point of science. It
shouldn't be. Of course, it becomes a conflict of interest. Yes, absolutely. And so your science organizations are compromised by money from the biotech industry. Is that right way of saying
it? Yes. And what's been happening is that there was a soil scientist, Dr. Martin Stapper, who worked at CSIRO for decades. But he was very interested in the sustainable farming aspect and soil and microbes and that kind of thing. And he was sacked by the CSIRO because he said a few things that were critical of GM. And so it's a silencing, it's a shutting down. The other thing that you talked about, other groups that are pushing GM, big farming groups like the NFF, so the National Farming Federation, they're pushing this. And I think they've been swayed over by the thought that GM is wonderful and it's the way of the future. You know, they've been marketed to, and so they try and market that to their members. Also, the big grain handlers are often pushing things. And what's happening in Australia is a whole lot of companies that used to be locally owned, for example, the Australian Wheat Board, now that has been bought by Cargill. Oh. And Cargill and Monsanto have developed, they're both pushing GM. So what you find is the whole structure of the agriculture industry in Australia, one is it's being owned increasingly by foreign corporations who've got GM interests, and people aren't really discussing what GM is. You know, so it's quite sinister what's happening.
So Australia is halfway through, just like so many other countries, possibly losing its food independence.
Yeah, definitely. But it's not talked about because we have this whole market, you know, we should be selling to Asia, there's a huge farming boom. And you're thinking, well, when agricultural companies that used to be farmer-owned cooperatives are privatized and then sold off to the global marketplace, which is a handful of companies just looking at profit, we are in extremely dangerous territory, both for the food sovereignty and food security. Because I went to the Australian Grain Industry Conference, and it was absolutely terrifying because here I was listening to speakers talk about how we should be exporting to Asia and all the money that would be coming from this. And they weren't really thinking about that. They were saying things like, we used to have 40,000 grain farmers in Australia. Now we've got 20,000. That's fantastic. We need even less of them. They need to be focused on profit and new technology and getting bigger. And I'm thinking what they're talking about is having these enormous amounts of commodities like wheat or canola or sugar or whatever being traded globally to make money for a handful of companies. That does not feed people. You know, that you can't exist on a handful of commodities. We need a rich, varied diet grown in proper ways by local farmers that are regenerating the soil and regenerating water. We don't, you know, there's this kind of madness of get big and export. It's crazy.
So in other words, the small farmers are going to be extinct, or that's the plan?
Yes, that's the plan. Because it was absolutely chilling. And I'm listening to these people, and you realize that it's about making money. It's not about creating a great product. It's not about feeding people. It's not about looking after farmers. It's not about nurturing the soil. It's not about health for customers. It is about making money. And
of course. That's so sad.
Well, what's happening as well, which I think is happening worldwide, is a lot of people are realizing this and getting active. And what's happening in Australia, we've got the Australian Food Sovereignty Alliance, and MAJ is part of that. So we're really trying to awaken people that we really need to look after our farms and our farmers, and that these problems seem absolutely enormous and unsolvable. But we either support this huge commodity junk food behemoth, or we buy locally and we learn to cook again, and we're very careful about where we buy our food from. And so the Australian Food Sovereignty Alliance has been getting together the People's Food Plan. So we've got a draft of that out there at the moment, and we've got a federal election this year. So we're trying to make food and farming and health a really big election issue. So lots of people, we got 600 people all over the country to come together and discuss food and farming. And we've produced a working document, and then people are working on that now to slim it down and to really give people somewhere to go. And we're going to have food Fairness Week in August, and really trying to encourage people to see that all the community gardens, all the food swaps, all the farmers markets, all the box schemes that are springing up all over the place are really, really, really important and can transform this really industrial, sterile food system into something that's kind of rich and satisfying and delicious and fantastic.
That's wonderful. How do you see the situation going forward into the next few years?
Well, I think we're in a really, really serious point of change. And I think that it's up to all of us to look carefully and to make our decisions. And the decisions that each of us individually make will add up to where our planet and our food goes. And I know it's the same with you, but over in Australia, I mean, we've had droughts, we've had floods, we've had fires, we've had weather that we, you know, hasn't been seen before. And this past summer, because we're heading into winter now, this past summer, I had to increase the top of the temperature on the weather charts, because all over the place, weather was just breaking records all the time. And I think that what that means is that our food is not going to be easily available and so cheap as it was. We're all going to have to look really closely at this. And at the moment, it looks like we're slipping back into drought again. I mean, we've come out of 10 years of drought, which was awful, and then 2 years of good rain, and now we're slipping back into drought again. And drought in Australia is really awful, and what it does to land and farmers is terrible. But I think the challenge now is to really look at how we grow our food. And there's some amazing stuff on the net, and amazing people doing things. There's permaculture, there's holistic management, and really what it's talking about is, if we work with natural systems, if we work with the soil biology, if we work with humus, if we work with the fungi and the bacteria in the soil, we can actually store water in there, release nutrients, grow better crops, draw carbon out of the atmosphere, solve every single problem that we have. But first of all, we fundamentally have to realize that this kind of industrial system where you spray chemicals, you plant seeds, and you harvest and you ship it halfway around the world, that system cannot exist anymore. We have to rebuild the soil, rebuild our relationships, rebuild connections with farms and farmers and food and cooking and our neighbors, and put the health and happiness of people paramount, not money. So I think that it requires a mind shift, and it requires a shift in the heart, really, because I think there's such a lot of amazing stuff that we can do, but we just have to get started and do it. And we do it by very, very small things. We do it by planting some herbs. We do it by learning to cook. We do it by volunteering at the school garden. We do it by buying from a farmer who's using regenerative practices, and we rebuild our world.
Fantastic. Very well said, Frances. So I'm more or less done. Now, anything else would you like to say to listeners in this part who have not heard you before?
Oh, I just think that, you know, people who are concerned about food and farming and what's happened, we're having CSG, so coal seam gas fracking. The same issues are affecting everyone worldwide.
Absolutely.
Farmers are being swept off the land. People are being impoverished. We have diets that are making us sick. And people all over the world are refusing to take that and are taking action. But the action doesn't have to be big. It's about looking at our lives and making little alterations and bringing a bit more joy and lightness and consideration into it. That's what we have to do. And people are doing it. So I just think it can be, I think our industrial system tries to make us feel very small, very powerless, very insignificant, and very unknowledgeable. That's all wrong. All you have to do is do something nice for yourself and others and the planet. That's it.
And that brings us to the end of this podcast. Thanks go to Ms. Fran Murrell for advising us so eloquently on the situation on the ground in Australia, which is both a sad and a happy story. Sad because of the relentless push by big agribusiness to steamroll their way into our lives by changing the way we eat and the changing the way we grow food, both of which are not to the best interest of either humans or the living planet. But on the other hand, how grassroots movements are coming up, how spirited, concerned people are rising up everywhere to resist this onslaught. And with that happy note, I take your leave for today and see you next time. Ciao.